Well, Jesse, if you weren't convinced before, you will be now. The Jays are incapable of playing normal games in Seattle. That's what it is.
That was so much fun.
That was a wild game.
Great series.
Yeah, it was wild, man.
Start to finish. And that was, they saved the best for last.
They did, actually. All the drama came, certainly some drama came yesterday, a lot of drama coming today. Yeah. Both 5-4 wins for the Blue Jays. They're always crazy. Like, they have the silliest plays, the best, but also strangest performances. Like, it's almost a yearly tradition at this point. And yeah, today was no different, right?
20-minute video reviews.
Oh yeah, you loved the video review. You were in here loving that one.
Ridiculous.
The bullpen strands the bases loaded for 3 straight innings, including in extras, and the Jays now grab their first series win since mid-June. And today, like I said, a 5-4 win over the Mariners.
Yeah, I mean it was a fashion that you don't normally see the Blue Jays win in, at least this season. They're not known for their ability to come back in games. They're tied for the second fewest amount of comeback victories in all of Major League Baseball. And yet you start to understand why the Blue Jays record is what it is, because of the struggles that George Springer had. You know, he's not fully responsible for it, but you start to understand how big of a bat and how big of a presence that is in this lineup. And then to have the one big swing that he had today to get the Blue Jays right back in the baseball game, it just underscores how important he is to this Blue Jays roster. And I honestly think that was probably the most fist pumps I've seen, not only from George Springer, but from every pitcher that we saw in this game for the Blue Jays.
Sure.
Like, even the Yenesis Cabrera celebration at the end of the game, it was like they won the World Series. Like, these guys, I think they want to go on a run, obviously, whether they'll be able to do it or not. It's just, it felt like there was a lot of stress and anxiety that came off of their shoulders with the series victory today.
That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app here until the bottom of the next hour. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line, and the People's Text Line, as you guys know, is always open. All right, why don't we start with Springer? Because you kind of went there first. Springer hitting the 3-run bomb off Ryan Stanek in the top of the 7th inning. I think if you're listening to like Mariners talk, I'm sure there's some second guessing about taking George Kirby out of that game. 93 pitches thrown at that point, but he did let 2 runners on. But George Springer hitting that 3-run bomb off of Stanek, that's like easily the biggest moment of the season for him, right? Like, there's not, it's like not, I know he hit 2 home runs against Rodon, but like, no question, like, just situation. Where the series was in front of like a pseudo home crowd, and you could hear them, like, those people, the Jays fans at T-Mobile Park were living and dying on every pitch. That must have been phenomenal fun for the people who did go to Seattle. So I'm very happy for them. But he's someone we've kind of all dumped on at one point or another this season.
Doubt.
People have called in and texted into this particular program to say he should be cut, he should be DFA'd, trade him, just eat the salary, like whatever. He is playing out of his mind in these last, 10 to 12 games thereabouts. He's been phenomenal. He finished 2023 with 21 home runs and 72 RBI. He is now at 31 RBI and 10 home runs. Like, there is a world in which he finishes at his 2023 level of production, which is kind of insane to say, given the conversations we were having about Springer. Now, obviously, like, it's still not ideal for a guy getting paid $25 million a year. But like, given the conversation was not he's been playing poorly, given the conversation was he needed to no longer be on this team, that's a pretty remarkable turnaround.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And you could see it. Like, I just talked about the fist pumps. Like, nobody was going crazier than George Springer when he hit it out. If you haven't seen the video yet, you will eventually see it. And it was just fist pump after fist pump. His helmet almost came off when he was rounding first base. He was going nuts. I mean, and you can't, you know, feel anything but be happy for the guy. Yeah, is it perfect for the Blue Jays that George Springer unfortunately couldn't get going up until July when they're seemingly out of any kind of playoff contention? Yeah, of course, it's not ideal. But I'll raise my hand and say I was someone that thought that he should stop playing regularly. I thought,
sure,
bring his playing time down to 2-3 times a week and let the other guys try and fill in. And maybe, honestly, over time, that should still be the answer. But certainly right now, he's earned his place back in the lineup. And you said it, since June 25th, he's batting .447.
That's incredible.
With a .1454 OPS, 5 home runs and 16 RBI.
That includes today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, crazy. That's crazy. He's one of the hottest hitters in all of baseball. And obviously, just like his cold streak didn't last forever, this hot streak isn't going to last forever either. But I think what it does is it underscores his importance to the lineup and how the Blue Jays, if they really want to try and make some sort of miraculous run at this thing, you're going to need to take advantage of the times when he is hot, because he is an important bat in this lineup and a big, big moment for George Springer today.
DB in London on the text line, 590-590, says, "Show, I've been really hard on Springer, but he really came through today. Go Jays." Yeah, he absolutely did. No kidding. Matt in Burlington says, "Nice to see Georgie snapping his slump. The team plays better when he's genuinely smiling." There's no text on this one, but this is pretty funny. "My pelvic floor muscles are stronger than ever before from watching the bullpen for the last 2 games. Thank you, Blue Jays bullpen." It's true. It's like doing Kegels.
Yeah. Stressful, man. But it's been great baseball to watch. Like, would you rather see that and be stressed, or, you know, have them be out of the game early on, which it certainly looked like before the George Springer big swing. So, I mean, I think for George, man, like, it's just, it's been such a long road to get here, and it doesn't mean that you were wrong if you were criticizing George Springer either, because it was a long time where he struggled here, and he's still, you know, his average still isn't great, and yeah, we're projecting out that he might actually end up having decent numbers at the end of the year, but it's not like because he's had a good 2.5-week stretch here that suddenly all the criticism that was lobbied his way is unwarranted. It's just nice to see him snap out of it and prove to you that he can still get it done at this level, because those were the questions. They were like existential questions about George Springer's future in baseball.
Yeah.
Like, it was outright cut George Springer, like DFA him, and then he's a free agent. But that's obviously not going to happen, because he shows you that he still has it. You just have to find a way to get him to continue this.
Before we go to the phones, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Go to the phones, get to a bunch of callers very quickly. I just wanted to talk about the bullpen very quickly with you, Jesse. Let's, because the bullpen was phenomenal.
Unreal.
Truly unreal.
Fun, I think, to watch.
That's the right word, because I mentioned off the top, but they stranded the bases loaded in 3 straight innings, including the bottom of the 10th inning.
Yeah.
Like, they were absolutely nails today. Pearson, Pop, Little, Green, and Cabrera. So Pop had some struggles, right? He I think he walked 2 guys. Well, one of them was an intentional walk, but he hit a batter as well. So Pop was a little rough, but Pearson, an inning, no hits, no walks, 1 strikeout. He entered a situation where there were 2 on and no outs after they let Berríos come back out in that particular inning, and he had some trouble, and he, you know, tapped his chest, clearly acknowledged that it was a little bit on him in that particular inning, but he faced all 3 batters. He allowed no runs. That's very impressive for a guy that we, like, kind of similar to the conversation we've had about George Springer. We've slammed Nate Pearson before, and lately he has pitched in his last, 3 appearances or so, he has pitched much better. Zach Pop, a little bit dicey, certainly, but yep. Brendan Little comes in with the bases loaded, and he does his job against J.P. Crawford. Chad Green kind of had a little bit of ups and downs there. He walked a guy. He had 2 hits and got 2 strikeouts in that inning as well to send the game to extras. And then Yenesis Cabrera, who I've said this before, but you've heard me use the term the circle of trust when it comes to bullpen relievers. And right now, Jesse, I think Trevor Richards and Chad Green are the only guys in the circle of trust.
Well, I thought you were going to put him in there.
No, but I think Yenesis Cabrera is like the next guy.
It's close.
Right? Like, if he's not in there already, he's maybe it's time to bring back the inner and outer circle of trust. He might be in the outer circle of trust after what we saw today.
That cutter on the outside corner up to the right-handed hitters was really working for Yenesis today. And what's Bill Belichick's phrase? Do your job. Right? That's all you can really expect from these guys. You're relying on, with the exception of Green and Cabrera, 3 relievers to get you to the end of the game, all who have ERAs over 450 and all who have struggled at different points of the season. And you're asking them to shut it down. And it's a dicey proposition, because the bullpen obviously is beleaguered at this point. And what do? You look at the box score at the end of the day, 0-0-0-0-0 in terms of earned runs. And that's all you can ask for from this bullpen that has been an issue. Let's face it, they've been dealing with health concerns all year long and really performance concerns. They're the second worst bullpen statistically in all of baseball. So it is incredibly refreshing, I think, for Blue Jays fans, and just to watch the bullpen be able to shut it down on a day when they really needed it. They really desperately needed this series victory against Seattle. They haven't done well in Seattle over the last little while. They had lost the previous three series.
That's over the course of multiple years,
yeah,
essentially.
They were asking a lot of these guys, and they got it done, and they deserve a lot of credit for today's performance.
416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones, and let's start with Russ in New Jersey. Russ, what's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I don't want to pour cold water. I give a lot of credit to the bullpen. Pearson comes in first and second. But remember one thing. The Blue Jays have a terrible offense. One of the only teams that scored less runs than them is the Seattle Mariners. So, you know, give the ball. You know, they got to do what they got to do, and they went out there. But we weren't talking about the 27 Yankees out there today, that lineup. Number two is, yes, Springer's been, you know, the guy's just hitting the cover off the ball, and he's maybe the hottest guy in baseball. But, you know, it hasn't – the Blue Jays, you know, since even that second game against Boston where they won the game – and then they played the Yankees, they're 500. But the guy that I want to talk about today, which doesn't get brought up, is because I don't think this team has a chance to make the playoffs, is Spencer Horwitz. Because he's
we talk about Spencer Horwitz all the time. Like, Horwitz is talked about, like, every day.
Okay, but I just love that the guy comes up with a plan. And he just comes up. You rarely see him get cheated in at bats.
Yep.
You rarely see him have a bad at bat. Yeah, he's going to strike out sometimes, and he's going to get. But the guy comes up, even when he makes outs a lot of times. They're 8, 7, 8, 9 pitch at bats, which helps, you know, the other hitters in the lineup. This guy looks like, you know, it's a short period of time, and obviously pitchers are going to adjust to him. But this guy looks like a keeper. It just looks like the game is not too fast for him. He waits on his pitch, and he doesn't swing at pitches rarely out of the strike zone. He's just like a hitter that you love to have on your team. Because, like I said, he's rarely going to get cheated at bat. And for the future, he looks like a guy, you know, we want to know what the future of this team is. He's, you know, in the short time he's been here, he looks like a real good keeper for this team for the future.
Hey, Russ, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us here on JSTOC. Yeah, I mean, I've said this to you many times, Jesse, but, you know, when you talk about Spencer Horwitz, like if a big part of identifying the future of this team is like naming guys, essentially, right? And if you think it's like, if you think it's Barrios or you think it's Vladdy, for example, I'm not going to quibble with you, but a lot of people are like, well, beyond those two guys, like who else is it maybe? And I've said this many times, but I think Spencer Horwitz is a part of that, right? He's a teensy bit older, but I mean, if you're only having the conversation as like, who's going to be on this team next season and maybe even the season after, because there's a lot of guys whose deals are up, not just next year, but the year after and the year after. Like this, it's a very short-term built team as the way it is constructed presently. Spencer Horwitz has got to be a part of that. And we were talking about this during the game off the air, obviously, but I mean, you talk about in a year that has largely been disappointing, and it's been, I think that's why I choose to focus on the positives when they win 2 of 3 in Seattle, because like standings be damned, it was a fun series, right? And
agreed.
I think that's why, when you look at what's going on in Seattle and what went on rather with the Blue Jays and the Mariners, and you try and identify like just fun baseball moments that you can maybe hope to see more of over the course of the season, like regardless of what happens at the deadline, regardless of if they make the playoffs or not, I think we know what the answer to that question is. But apart from Vladdy, I actually think the next most fun aspect for me, at least, is watching Spencer Horwitz hit. Like it's always a very mature AB, like Russ was saying.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to see it, not just at this game, but I mean, like the one that sticks out of my mind is his AB at the very end of the game against Emmanuel Clase, right? And Clase looked frustrated against him, and he was doing it today against like George Kirby, who entered this game with like 100+ strikeouts.
It was disgusting.
Right? And he had some filthy
we'll
pitches
talk about
today.
That too, yeah.
But man, Spencer Horwitz is fun to watch.
Yeah, he really is. And look, this is where the Blue Jays are. You have to figure out who's going to be on your roster in 2025 and beyond. And Spencer Horwitz, he's doing everything that you could ask of him. Like he's being given the opportunity and he's taking advantage of the opportunity. And Russ made a lot of really good points. It's difficult at bats. The Class A reference is a great one by you. He's doing everything you could possibly ask of him. The one thing that I would say is that we saw a similar run last year when David Schneider came up, and it was different timing, so this wasn't as long of a stretch that Horwitz is going to get for the rest of the season here. So you'll be able to, I think, to identify more of what Spencer Horwitz is made of. But you're seeing David Schneider really in the doldrums right now. He's really kind of fallen off a cliff here. And I just wonder, you know, how many at-bats are these guys going to need before you can make some sort of definitive declaration that Spencer Horwitz, for example, is a guy that you want to have on your team next year.
Right.
Do you need to see some power out of him? Because he's never really been known as a power hitter. Is that something that you're looking for guys that you want to see on the roster next year? So if he finishes the year with 5-6 home runs, but he bats 280, is that good enough for you? So these are things that you're going to have to figure out in terms of roster construction. But all you can really do right now is ask these guys to put their best foot forward. And Spencer Horwitz has been honestly one of their best hitters over the last little while. And one of their most feared hitters, I think, just because of the amount of pitches that he takes and his ability to keep the innings going.
I think it's also an interesting idea to think about if you believe Horwitz is part of the team going forward, then he just got called up. Like, I know he got called up last year, but I mean, the service time on Spencer Horwitz's career is very little. Like, it's a very teeny tiny amount, essentially. And I mean, I know it's kind of like, I don't know how good I feel about like saying, oh, great, you can control him on the cheap for like the next six, 7 years or whatever it is. But that is an aspect of him being a part of this future. You know what I mean? Like, that's a part of the conversation we talk about with Vladdy. It's part of the conversation we talk about with Varsho, certainly. And Vladdy's going to be a UFA before many of these guys if they don't get a deal done with him. But the point being, like, they're still relatively young and they play well enough that, you know, you could probably pencil Horwitz in going forward. Like, if you were to tell me right now that Horwitz is like the starting second baseman on it, which is itself crazy considering he has not played a lot of second base, but if he's a starting infielder certainly next year for 162 games, I'm not going to quibble with you, really. And again, like Russ said, it's a really small sample size. And I mean, David Schneider, for example, was an equally small sample size, and
yeah,
he played really well,
and he's
struggled a little bit so far in the last couple of month and a bit. But you know, right now you feel pretty good about what you're getting from Spencer Horwitz.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Like, he's again 3-for-5 today. He's been great. But it's a small sample size. So what that means is he should be playing every day.
Yes, yes.
You have to figure out,
like, we talked
what
about
he's
this
made of.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be lifting him in certain matchups anymore. Like,
no.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's,
no pinch hitting David Schneider for him. David Schneider himself should be playing as close to as every day as possible if you don't think that you have a chance at the playoffs. I know that in the dugout and in the clubhouse, they're probably still trying to convince themselves that they have some sort of something in them to make a run at this. I'm not sure that's the case. I think more importantly, you have to figure out what you have, because we've talked ad nauseum about the farm system being kind of bare. These are the guys that you have. The David Schneiders, the Spencer Horwitz, the Ernie Clements, those guys were your prospects that are now with the major league team. And you have to figure out if you can replace the Turners, the Kiermaiers, and those guys with the prospects that you've brought up. So it's imperative that a Spencer Horwitz plays every day and gets as many at-bats as possible and as many reps as second base, too.
Couple of texts on the text line I want to get to before we go back to the phones. 590, 590, name and location. Mike in Victoria. Mike actually, so I don't know if I told you this or not, Jesse, I forget, but Mike had texted on Friday when we were doing the late night game.
Yeah.
And Mike had said, oh, like, I couldn't spend the $2,000 to go to Seattle. He just texted to say, I wish I had gone. I wish I had gone. Great entertainment this
laugh.
Weekend.
Yeah, but that was an he's right. It was an amazing.
It was a good series.
It was an amazing series, but as always, next year.
It's true. They do play there pretty much every year. Donald from St. Cloud, Manitoba. Nice gritty win for the Jays. Let's hope they can go on a run now. Let's see. Nicole in Ottawa, the nation's capital. Nicole says, well, boys, this game had it all. Great pitching, a small ball, quote unquote, first run, which is very true. People clamoring for more small ball. You got your wish very early on. A Springer dinger.
The smallest of balls.
The balls don't get smaller than that, Jesse. They don't. Okay. Like, very much the smallest of balls. A Springer dinger, bullpen getting in and out of some tight spots. Varsho driving in the winning run, and the Blue Jays win. That's from Nicole.
The whole thing was fun.
And to your point, David from Dartmouth says, this was not sleepless in Seattle. It was anything but.
Nice.
So let's call it excitement in Seattle extraordinaire at the ballpark. I like that one.
Yeah. Like, at some point, you got to stop worrying about the standings every single day. And some people might not want to hear that because it feels like you're just kind of letting everybody off the hook.
Right.
But you have to allow yourself to enjoy good baseball when good baseball is being played. And you just saw three games of, game one was a pitcher's duel. Game two was fun, 5-4 also, and then today was probably the best game of the three. Great pitching, one bad pitch from Jose Barrios, but a great game overall. Ends in extras. Sometimes you just got to allow yourself to enjoy the entertainment, and we got a lot of it this
weekend. Like, do I necessarily think it's changed, again, like, to use the phrase I used yesterday, do I necessarily think it's changed the calculus of the whole season?
No, that's like, fine, but like, what are you going to be miserable
that's
the
what
whole
I mean.
Time?
That's exactly what it is. Like, you can enjoy things. Enjoy things. Have
totally.
Some fun a little bit.
I love it.
416-870-0590 1-888-666-0590 star 590 on your cell. well. Let's go to the phones. Ryan in Innisfil joining us here on Jays Talk. Ryan, what's up?
Boys, we're winning some games, boys. How are we doing? So, yeah, I just want to hop on the positive train a little bit. I'm looking forward to 2025. Let's get this straight. Not this season. This season, I think, is still kind of gone a little bit. But seeing what this lineup actually, they're kind of capable of scoring runs now, where this trade deadline is so pivotal to the future of this franchise. Mm-hmm. If they can just add one or two bats to this lineup and obviously one or two things to the bullpen, you're not worried about 2025 or 2026, maybe still about the future of the organization as far as the farm system goes, but we're not that far away, man. The team is not that far away. Just a few guys that can drive in runs. Spencer Horwitz is going to be awesome up there. Vladdy's always going to be good. My favorite thing about Vladdy, too, is he never gets down, whereas people are having, like, the argument between if I want to keep Bo, if I want to keep Vladdy. I'm 100% Vladdy because his attitude is always spectacular, whereas Bo's kind of a bit of a mope. And being a coach of a baseball team, when you have that energy of if you're struggling, don't let your struggles go on to your teammates. And I kind of get that vibe out of Bo, so I don't know. I'm just here to be happy that we're playing good baseball. I'm looking forward to the rest of this season to see if they can maybe string something together and give us a glimpse of hope into the 2025-2026 season. It's really all on Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro's plate now to make sure that we have a decent next couple of years and hopefully a better future.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for the call, man. Thanks for joining us on Jays Talk. Yeah, I mean, he's not wrong that regardless of the fun of this, like, you still need the trade deadline to go as well as humanly possible, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You do need to still explore trade options for all the UFAs and maybe even for some guys who are not UFAs. And again, like, it's just that's the reality of the way the season has gone. But it is true. I mean, I do think when it comes to, again, identifying the core, Jesse, if you can move forward with a lot of these guys, and it's just funny because a lot of them did have significant moments today. Vladdy, I mean, he did boot the ground ball at third base, but he had some other good moments, I think, at third base, including mm-hmm. some nice ground ball plays where he had some absolute laser beam throws to Horwitz.
He's got an arm.
There's Vladdy. I don't know that that's going to be Vladdy's position full-time going forward, really, but if you can't play Ernie Clement every single day, and IKF's on the IL, there's like really no one else. Like, you can really only play Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at third base. But while IKF's still on the mend, I would expect Clement to be that guy probably for the most part. But generally speaking, it's probably like there's a bit of a give and take with Vladdy at third base. But given that I don't expect him to be there permanently, I'm going to say it's kind of a wash. But Vladdy had some big moments today. Varsho drove in the winning run.
Yeah.
Horwitz had three hits. Like, these are all guys you think are going to be on the team, generally speaking, for the next several years, you would think.
Yeah, Varsho's got a little bit of the clutch gene. Like, he's not hitting great for average this season. We all know what he can do defensively, but he has those two grand slams, and he had the single again today. Like, this guy, he knows how to get it done in the clutch, and it's nice to see.
I'd like for him to do it all the other parts of the game.
Yeah, yeah, not just in the clutch. But yeah, it's a great point. Like, the Springer, you know, irrespective of the first few months of the season, everything we've said about him, probably going to be around for a while because of his contract, and Varsho's going to be here, and Vladdy's going to be here, and people think Spencer Horwitz should be here. Like, that is the core, and Barrios is a part of that too. So everyone sort of factored in to this victory. I think what I want to see is Ernie Clement, David Schneider, and Spencer Horwitz getting as many at-bats and playing as many times in the field as possible, because what Vladdy being at third opens up, and I don't think he has to do this every single day, but you have Spencer Horwitz with the now option of playing first base, which is where he was today, and the front office has talked so much about the versatility. Ironically, a lot of these guys are playing positions that they weren't that comfortable or weren't playing at all 18 months ago, but now if they get more exposure there and they do get more comfortable, it just opens you up to even at the trade deadline, being able to do different things and saying, hey, maybe Spencer Horwitz is going to be the full-time first baseman next year and Vladdy's going to DH and play third or something like that. Like, there are different things that you can do if these guys prove to you that not only can they get it done at the plate, but they can also get it done in the field and they don't look like a fish out of water because they just picked up the position right 18 months ago. So just continue to give them reps. For me, that's the most important thing.
Then you got to include Leo Jimenez in there then. He got his first two major league hits today. Not one, but two.
Yeah.
including his first one off.
I said my expectations. Do you remember in the pregame show you asked me what my expectations were for Leo Jimenez?
That's the anti-jinx.
And I said my expectations are zero, and he far exceeded those expectations.
I mean, well, yeah, if the expectations are zero, it's pretty much impossible not to exceed them.
Not in baseball. He could have easily got over four, and that would have been zero.
I guess that's true. That is very true. But hey, congratulations to Leo Jimenez. I thought he had a decent outing today, and his first career hit coming off of George Kirby. I thought that's a tough guy to get hits again and to not strike out against. And I thought he acquitted himself pretty well.
Kirby and Berríos going blow for blow was just nasty to watch. Those are two excellent pitchers. And I know that from an earned run perspective, they didn't have a great day, but they both had some serious stuff on the hill. And Berríos, it was really one awful pitch that led to the home run. Like he was just dealing. The slurve was diving out of the zone. The fastball was cooking. He hit 98 at one point in the game, which is the fastest pitch of his entire career. And Kirby has the ball going both ways. It was beautiful to watch. But yeah, that one pitch for Jose Berríos, which has sort of been the issue for him this season. We talked about the home runs. He's allowed the most home runs in baseball. And he was cooking. And he just threw that middle 88 mile an hour change that just got obliterated. And that's sort of been the issue for Jose, and hopefully he can figure it out, because really 98% of this start was excellent. Even the Robles home run, like it was a good pitch. He really had just one bad pitch in the start today, and he ended up not winning the game, not losing the game, but still a decent effort.
Yeah, 6-plus innings for Berríos. They say the 6-plus because he came back out for the next inning but didn't get an out. But 6-plus innings, 7 hits, 4 runs, all of which were earned, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts for Berríos. That is ridiculous. I can't remember the last time we got a 10 strikeout game from two starters, I should say, in the same series, because Gausman also had 10 strikeouts, albeit in a losing effort on Friday night. But you're right, he gave up the two home runs, one to Robles and one to Garver. And yeah, the Victor Robles home run, Robles hit that thing it was an absolute bomb that Robles hit into the seats. It's hard for me to see the pitch that he threw. It was a sinker right on the edge of the zone, bottom three. He hits a spot. Kirk was set up almost like on the edge, maybe almost even outside of the zone when that happened. And Robles jacks it for a massive bomb. And it's hard for me to see that pitch and think like, oh, that was a terrible pitch, right? Like, it just sometimes you give the batter a little bit of credit. I give Robles some credit on that one. In the Mitch Garver case, that was a bad pitch.
Really bad
pitch.
That
was not good.
He knew it, too.
And he knew it, for sure. Like, 88-mile-an-hour changeup, like you're saying, like more or less right down the middle, a little more up than middle. But coming into today, this is from our pal Chris Black at Sportsnet, but Berríos had allowed a .467 slugging percentage on 2-strike changeups to righties. That is higher than literally any other pitch he throws. And he'd already been feeding them like a steady diet of four-seamers, sinkers, and slurves. It's like, why throw the changeup Garver? It was a bizarre decision. But luckily, it did not burn the Blue Jays too much, as they do win 5-4 in extras. Let's squeeze one more call in before we take our first break. Let's go to the West Coast in Vancouver. Gary joining us from Vancouver. And Gary, as I understand it, it's your birthday. So happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks. I'd like to thank the producer for letting me have a couple of seconds here. Yes, it is my birthday. I watched the Blue Jays. I'm going to say, I've got to say something here. I'm not a bandwagon guy. I don't believe in jumping on and off bandwagons. I don't do that. Horwitz is playing well, but I want to say something about George Springer. In case people don't realize this guy is like a big kid. He's 34. He does his thing. He's having fun out there. And isn't that what this game is all about? Yes, we want to win a series. Yes, we want to do this. Yes, we want to get into the playoffs. But Horwitz is doing well. Jimenez is doing well. George Springer's doing his thing. That's what it's entertainment. It isn't supposed to be grind it and going out there and doing all this stuff that makes it so dull. It's like painting, watching paint dry. And I'm going to say this. I'm watching the BC Lions also win 31-8 against Hamilton. I'm having a great day, and I just like to thank you guys for letting me come on. Okay.
Hey, Gary.
The
thanks
great
again.
Call, Gary.
That's amazing. Thanks for calling in. Can I just say this real quick, Jesse? Tom Young, our technical director, had a chance to go to that game today. So, Tom, I'm going to say it's a good thing you didn't go to the game. That's really funny. Oh my God, that's actually hilarious. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. That's really funny. I agree with him on just the idea, Jesse, about it being fun. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've said this a billion times. Like, I don't think it's going to change the overall outcome of the season. I really don't. But generally speaking, I mean, like, you think the people in Seattle were complaining about what the record is of the Blue Jays? Probably not. Those people look like they had a blast. I was telling you, like, towards the end of the game, when it was basically like the die, because it wasn't a packed park. It wasn't completely, like, there were some spots where you could see some
people
seats
made
and so
a choice.
On, right?
Some Blue Jays fans, I'm sure.
I'm sure the Mariners fans did as well, right? Yeah. So I think that's fair.
A quote-unquote business decision.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm not blaming anyone by any means. But you go out there and you probably have, like, really hardcore Mariners fans at T-Mobile Park there at the end. And you have all the Jays fans who pay lots of money to go to Seattle. And, like, they were, like, living and dying on everything, like, the review. And people were cheering because they thought he was out. And that Vladdy didn't push him off the base. And when they booed when it wasn't overturned. Like, it just, those people had tons of fun. And I think that's an underrated aspect of, like, what we call entertainment.
Yeah. I feel like at times you obviously... It depends on what you're watching. If you are watching a 1-0 boring baseball game, it's hard to get involved. But there's elements of, like, you get out of it what you put into it as a fan. Like, if you're just not paying attention and don't really care and accept that there's nothing to get excited about, then you can go find something else to do with your time because it's just going to make you miserable. But if you have, you know, moments where you can at least get excited like you were able to today, if you watch the game today and this series in general – and didn't get excited or couldn't at least suspend your disbelief of what the standings are for this weekend or one game here and there or one good moment and allow yourself to enjoy the George Springer home run, like, then there's nothing really to say. There's no reason for you to watch anymore because you're just going to make yourself miserable. Like, at some point you have to just forget about what the standings are. We all know that it's bad. We all think that the Blue Jays should be better.
Yes.
But if you're going to, like, it's still entertainment at the end of the day, and you have to allow yourself to be entertained when it gives you something, and they gave you something this weekend, so allow yourself to enjoy it.
I just think of that scene from Gladiator when Russell Crowe's like, are you not entertained?
Yeah.
Is this not why you are here?
This was great. This was probably my favorite series of the whole season.
Sure.
Because the Blue Jays are a lot of times are not the most entertaining team because when an offense doesn't score that much, like, you can only get so excited about pitching duels game after game after game.
Agreed.
You do need some offense.
They had two hits and one run on Friday.
Yeah. Not great. But again, you can appreciate the Kevin Gausman.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
Performance.
Sure.
But today, like, this was an awesome game in many different facets. The home runs, the pitching was great. The defense was good. The clutch hit from Varsho was good. All the players getting into it was awesome to watch. That's not something you see every day either. So, yeah, just allow yourself to enjoy it a little bit if you can. If you don't want to, that's fine too, but don't expect to cheer a lot.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call, 590-590, name and location. That is the People's Text Line. It is always open. We'll go back to the phones, back to the text line as well after this. The Blue Jays win 5-4 in extras to take this series from the Mariners at Rogers Center West, i.e. T-Mobile Park in Seattle. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, it's definitely not your average road trip. You know, it's really cool to see the fans even before the game, and the fact that they're all, you know, shoved right behind our dugout is great. You kind of get to know them a little bit over the course of the weekend, and the support has just been phenomenal every time we come here. It's a cool weekend of baseball. You know, with three close games, you know, kind of similar teams, I think, too, and it was awesome that the fans were here to kind of support us. We love coming here.
That is John Schneider talking about the home crowds, quote-unquote home crowds, out at T-Mobile Park, where the Blue Jays faithful, Jesse, showed up in droves as the Blue Jays did win in extra innings 5-4. They win today, and they do grab the series. They take 2 of 3 And it's their first series win since mid-June.
I'm still buzzing.
When Yenesis Cabrera got the pop-up at the end of the game, right after he walked, I think it was Mitch Garver, right? So he walks Garver, gets Raleigh to pop up. The crowd cheered like you would hear them cheer at the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
Like, it is deafening at the Rogers Center when they win those kinds of games. And it sounded like it out in Seattle today.
I'm actually not joking. If you go look at Yenesis Cabrera's reaction after they won, that is the reaction you have when you win the ALCS. He was so jacked up. And that's fine. I'm totally fine with that because they haven't had that many opportunities to get that excited during the season. So enjoy it while you can. But it was amazing. All the Blue Jays are fired up today. It was fun to see.
Let's go to the text line, Jesse. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Read a couple of texts before we get out of here in a couple of minutes. Aaron in Saskatoon says, great conversation around next year's roster. Shapiro and Atkins need to be shown the door, but do you think that move happens mid-season so a new regime could get to work on the future? I'll say this. I don't think it happens.
I agree.
Because for one thing, not mid-season at the very least. If it happens, it'll happen in the offseason. Or maybe what will happen is Mark Shapiro will stay on and he'll move Ross Atkins to, kind of like they did with Dave Hudgens last year. Like, they'll move him to another spot in the front office without really dismissing him and give him he'll be like an advisor to the team president or something, and they bring on a different GM or officially give Click the GM role. It's a little different, I suppose, because, Hudgens' role wasn't quite as forward-facing as Atkins' role is, right, as the GM versus a coach, right? But I kind of wonder if that happens in the offseason. But I mean, don't get me wrong. I do think that change needs to be made. But I do kind of wonder the reason it doesn't happen midseason is, it's Sunday today. The MLB draft is in a week.
Yeah, there's no chance.
The draft starts in less than a week, actually. It's 8:22 p.m. Eastern here on the East Coast. That starts at 5 Eastern next Sunday. So, you're probably not making a change before the MLB draft. If that's the case, then that's basically right before the All-Star break. Are you going to make a change during the All-Star break while the draft's going on? Probably not. And then if you're still trading guys before the deadline, which is at the end of the month, are you making a change before that? Probably not. So now we're into August.
And it doesn't
matter at that point. Yeah. I would say no, right? So I'm guessing it's for those reasons I say it probably won't happen in midseason, but I'm guessing.
And with that, I'm out. There's no chance that they're getting rid of Ross Atkins now. It's a conversation to be had in the off season. There's no doubt. And I just feel like at this point with the Blue Jays, quote unquote, out of the race, depending on what you think, but the probabilities suggest that they are in fact out of the playoff race. Like, I just don't think there's the same level of urgency, for the fan base. Like, I think the vitriol was like everyone came down on the front office really, really hard, really quickly over the first half of the season. And I almost feel like people have, not that they've checked out, but it's just kind of like they are where they are. And what are you going to do? Say the same things, criticizing the front office every single day. And I just feel like all the air that is an oxygen that has been wasted has sort of all been sucked up already. And it's like, okay, we'll reevaluate at the end of the season, or at least once we see what they do with the trade deadline, which will be another opportunity. If you don't like this front office and you don't like what they do during the trade deadline, you're going to see all that noise come back.
Oh, yeah.
But as of right now, it feels like it's calmed down just a little bit because, they've been the same spot for a while now.
Yeah, not because they won this series.
No,
but because
they're just where they are.
Yeah, exactly. Not a lot has changed, for good or for worse, generally speaking, right? I actually will be. I think I've been fairly critical of it, but I think I'll actually be even more critical of the front office if they actually don't make trades. You know what I mean? Like if they're either buyers, which I don't know why they would be, but which would be crazy, right? But if they're not sellers to the extent in which you believe they should be sellers.
I think that would be an unmitigated disaster. What are you looking for? What's the upside?
Yeah.
If you don't do that, you just run it back. We've been down this road before. We've been down this road with the Toronto Raptors. It's like everybody knows that's not an option. So you got to get it done one way or another. It's just, what do you get in return and what are you going to sell? Those are the most important questions.
Before we go back to the text line, I wanted to play a quick clip for you, Jesse. Because we heard from John Schneider, but I want to hear a little bit from George Springer. George Springer has had a tough year, to put it lightly, but he has been hitting a lot better, as you said, in his last 10 to 12 games. So let's hear from Springer, who was the man of the hour with the 3-run jack to tie this game.
Well, hopefully a lot different. Obviously there's still a lot to go. There's still a lot of stuff for me to do. There's a lot more games. I feel good right now. I felt good for a long time. You know, sometimes you just don't get hits. That's the game. But you know, to help and to contribute, you know, these last X amount of games, it's fun.
I just remember hearing from Springer, like when he was in the midst of this huge slump, like again, like 2-3 weeks ago. And they ask him the same question about, like, you know, how you feeling, like, what you know, what are you doing? You talking about you're putting in a lot of work, like what kind of work, like, what do you, you know, what's up there, George? And he basically said, like, yeah, I'm doing like everything possible. I am exercising every resource and opportunity at my disposal in order to make a change. And again, like, is even where he is at right now, does it mean he's still worth $25 million a year for the next, like, 2.5 years, including this year? Like, no, right? If you're talking about the end of the year still being 2023 level of production, no, obviously. But at the same time, I think it is good to see him get back to just some semblance of being a major league player, because he was not before this stretch.
Yeah, no, he definitely wasn't. And here's John Schneider on George Springer after the game today. What goes unnoticed is when he was struggling, he was the same guy on defense and in the clubhouse. When he's going, it's easy for the offense to be contagious a little bit. And he just seems like a great leader in the clubhouse, like someone who's fun to be around, right? And I think that goes a long way. And if you were critical of George Springer, it doesn't mean that you don't like the guy or that you don't think he's a good clubhouse presence or any of that. It's just the reality on the field was that he just wasn't playing well and he wasn't good enough. And he was part of the reason why, and frankly, still is part of the reason why they are where they are and they're out of the playoff race. But it doesn't mean that you can't be happy for the guy, because he clearly was battling the whole way. He was trying to get back to the George Springer of old. And at least for a little bit here, it appears that he has. And that's awesome. Proves that hard work does pay off sometimes.
Fab from Mississauga on the text line says, I love the show, guys. Listen regularly. It's my kid's 5th birthday today. If you give a shout out to Alessio. So happy birthday to Alessio.
Alessio
shares
birthday.
A birthday with That's Gary, awesome. As we know. So Gary and Alessio both getting happy birthday wishes today.
Got a win for him.
Quick question about Vlad and Bo from Fab. Given the age and the expensive contracts given to starting pitching, would you be willing to run it back with this core and allow Bo and Vlad to walk at the end of 2025? Or do you think it's pivotal they get dealt this season or during the winter? You know what? I've said this many times, but I'll say it again. I do think it's important that Vladdy gets signed to a big-time contract extension, even if it's big time is relative, but like a Matt Olson, 8 years, $160, $175 million over 8 years, you're paying him somewhere in the ballpark of $25 million a year, maybe a little bit less, depending on if there are opt-outs or incentives in there, kind of like a lot of these other young stars. That's where I'm going with that. But I'm thinking Bo, maybe it's a little more murky with him, but he's got to pick it up. But, I mean, the Pat from Brantford about free agents to be available to add into next year. I mean, if Bo does walk, I mean, Willy Adames is a free agent as well. Wouldn't mind seeing him as a Blue Jay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any urgency whatsoever in terms of trading Vladdy or Bo. I think the urgency is you got to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think he's a key piece moving forward, and I don't think he's going to be expecting to be overpaid to the point where it's unreasonable based on his numbers versus every other first baseman in baseball. So in terms of urgency, I lean more towards signing him versus trading either of them. And Bo Bichette, you sort of figure out a little bit later. You could do it in the offseason. You could do it next year. Even if he has a good year, but the team isn't doing well, you can trade him then if you have to. So there's options for the team.
When it comes to options, Jesse, you are the best option.
You are, buddy.
Thanks for doing this with
Had
me.
Had a blast. Fun to celebrate a win.
It is fun. We don't get to do it a lot, so it is fun when we get to do it together. That is Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Falmouth and Cambridge, Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Jesse Rubinoff, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho. We're out of here. No game tomorrow. It's a slightly different schedule until the All-Star break. I have all the late nights. Laren Barker back on Thursday. Enjoy the off day. We'll talk to you later.